Welcome to the Month End CPG Community Chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry. Welcome to episode 29 of the Month End Podcast. Excited to have my friend and colleague Keith Kohler on the show today. How are you doing, Keith?
I'm doing great, Brad. How are you today?
Good. Really excited about chatting about all things financing. Just for the listeners for the listeners out there, we're actually having a two-part podcast here with Keith. And this is part number one. We're going to chat about kind of intro to financing types, what makes sense for the specific business and phase you're in. And on top of that, how the current economic climate is affecting everything, which all of you out there kind of understand the economic climate the last 6 months is different than it's been the last several years. And then the next episode will be kind of just action steps of for all small business owners to identify how to get their things in order, things they can do to keep moving forward, maybe not getting financing now, but getting it in 12 months and just kind of action steps from kind of the conceptual things we'll talk about in the first podcast. So super excited for these kind of chats with Keith. Before we get started, Keith's from K2 Financing, also financingman.com. He's launched recently. He's got a lot of cool, exciting things going on. Keith, tell us about what you're doing, your background, who you work with, what you do, the whole nine yards for the listeners.
Yeah, great. I appreciate that, Brad. I'm really happy to be here with you today and to be addressing this most important topic for your listening community. And by way of introduction to all of them, again, it's Keith Kohler here, and I created a brand during the pandemic called Financing Man. And really, the core objective of what I do is I help companies at any stage of their development get the right financing at the right time. So that could be a certain product and mix of financings at one stage of your development and a very different one at a different stage. And we're going to go through that today together. And my overall core promise to all of the listeners here, all the founders, is that I can meet you where you are and guide you along your financing journey. So the way I do that is I do a strategy call with people called the Your Financing Review Call. And I help founders understand what they can qualify for now in terms of financing, and then depending upon their growth, a path to profitability or not, and the channel mix, help them understand all the different types of products that can be available to them and how they might sequence them and stack them to have the optimal outcome. And that includes equity, although I'm a specialist in debt and alternative financing. And that's what we're going to go through today. Some additional background. I'm an advisor to several founders in our space. Some I've done for several years, some more recently. And I'm a seed and angel investor in a half a dozen companies in the CPG space. I recently expanded into blockchain, and so that's something new and exciting. And the way I got my start in our industry, my core competency of CPG was when I was diagnosed celiac, which is gluten intolerant, and that was in January 2005. So that gave me an original strong reason why to get excited about how could I support founders with financing, because when I spoke with gluten-free companies, this was traditionally a huge pain point for them, as well as co-manufacturing. But since I knew I could do something immediately in finance and financing, this is what I chose to do. So Brad, what I'm gonna do for the benefit of your listeners is talk to them and share with them my thoughts on what financing could be available to them at different stages of their development. All right.
Awesome.
And I'm taking them through four. And I invite you, Brad, to chat with me and say, hey, Keith, there are a lot of people in this group or in that group, or, let's just think about what would be most appropriate and most beneficial to your listeners, the ones who currently work with you and the ones who are probably thinking about working with you and who we can serve together.
Definitely. So, and just to kind of even set the baseline for that, I think as we go through this, keep in mind, or if you can explain to the listeners, like, hey, you should start thinking about this at this level of your business. This really works
absolutely
at this level. So let's do that as well. And I was just thinking about your intro about the whole celiac situation. Yeah. I think you said in 05, you probably could barely find anything in the supermarkets. Now it's almost probably impossible when you walk to Whole Foods to find anything with gluten. So dramatic change the last year and a half, 15 years. So anyways, which is exciting times in the CPG space and why it's really exciting to be in this kind of very creative industry with a bunch of very fascinating people and fascinating brands. So
yeah, isn't it cool, Brad, that we get to work with some of the most amazing founders around, people who are truly dedicated to be game changing, right? Disruptive in the food industry, helping perhaps charities out, having elements of social responsibility, building a better set of food than what we see out there in the big food world. So it's great to support all of these people in their vision. And we know that what we're doing in our work in financing is one element in supporting that vision and their growth. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So to answer your question, yeah, I'll give you some context in terms of language and also put some numbers behind where I usually see those stages tend to come through. So our first stage is startup and early stage, right? So this is even pre-revenue for those folks. There might be a couple out there that are just getting the idea going. Perhaps even they're launching a new business. And so startup and early stage is the first one. Then we move into growth and pre-profitability. That can be the longest one and can have the widest range of revenue amounts and net incomes. We move into break even to profitable. So that's stage three. And the fourth one is multi-year profitability, when there's over 2 years of profitability key for us on a filed tax return. So again, startup and early stage, growth and pre-profitability, break even to profitable, and multi-year profitability. Probably most of the folks here are going to find themselves in the growth, pre-profitability, and the break even to profitable stage.
Yeah.
But we're going to, don't you think?
Probably one, two, a little bit of three. And then, rare, minimal four, I would imagine.
Four is extremely rare because probably by that time they've either been sold or someone else has taken a majority ownership stake in their companies, because that's just a typical path we see in CPG. However, I do see a lot more companies thinking, no, I want this to be mine. This will be a legacy and this will be an ongoing annuity once I get to be highly profitable. So for some of you, when we talk about startup and early stage, it's going to be new. For some of you, it's going to be a trip down memory lane. And so perhaps this will jog some memory of hopefully pleasant circumstances, but sometimes, oh, rats, maybe I could have done it a different way. And a key thing to know is the startup and early stage financing sources I'm about to share with you, they're good at any stage. And in fact, this just all builds upon each other. So whatever is good in stage one is always applicable at any stage. But when I get to stage four, it's only at stage four. You can't go back and say, I could do this as if I was at stage one. Okay. So now let's talk about startup and early stage. And Brad, for us, the first area of financing, I'm sure you see this on your balance sheets all the time of your customers, is the founders themselves. So you, our listener, are the first source of financing. And usually what I see is there are multiple sources of financing that we ourselves have access to, and I typically see four of them. The first one is someone's savings. And a big question for everybody here listening is to think about, well, how much do I do? If I have, say, $50,000 in savings, there's a certain romanticism to say, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to put it all in. I'm going to put everything on the line. And our media loves that. We see it on Shark Tank. We see it in different parts of our lives. But I would encourage you, from a debt financing perspective, to consider not doing all of that, maybe doing a third, perhaps as much as a half, because down the line, having cash on hand and having what's called liquidity is critical for later stage financers to see, as memorialized on a personal financial statement. So for savings, yes, that's one area. Credit cards is another popular one. The most important thing there is to not go too far so as not to crush your personal credit score. I often see that once you get above, say, 30% usage, that's a break in credit score models such that it lowers credit scores significantly once you go above 30. If you go above 50, even more so. So be mindful that if you have, say, $10,000 of availability, going above $3,000 could have an issue for you later qualifying for other types of financing, specifically term loans and other bank products. Home equity lines of credit are another source. If you do own your own personal residence or even maybe some investment property, you can get a HELOC. Definitely harder in this environment. And you said, Brad, about what's different now. Yeah, HELOCs are much harder to get. Those used to be a very widely available source of financing for businesses at this stage. Now it's less so. And a lot of banks don't want you to use HELOCs for business purposes.
Yep.
And they might exclude you specifically for that. So before you even go down this path, have that honest conversation. Last one, and I do see a lot more of this in more challenging markets, is IRAs and 401ks. Right? People borrow against them. Sometimes they liquidate them. And Brad, remind me, I think the IRS rule again is as long as you put it back within a year, you're fine, right?
It's something like that.
I think
to my tax guy. We have a tax team here that handles all that stuff, so I'm not all up on that, but it's something like that.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Definitely ask your tax person or a tax person on that aspect.
Everyone on that call, definitely, if you're considering this, please take a look and speak to your whoever is advising you on tax to be sure of this. The one thing I know for sure is if you don't put it back, it's going to be treated as income, and you'll have an early withdrawal penalty, and you'll have to pay income tax on it. And that, yes, at one point in my life was me. And in fact, everything I just mentioned to you, savings, credit cards, HELOCs, and IRAs and 401ks, I've done them all. I was actually a founder once myself, and this is how I started funding my business.
Yeah, I love it. A couple of just comments of mine on those. Number one is, like, I think a big part of this for founders is just, or anybody, right? Like, doing this is, you know, personal finance responsibility. Like, how good are your personal finances? Like, just without your business, do you keep your credit card payments on time? Are you keeping your balances low? Are you putting money away for savings? All this stuff factors into your mental decision in order to do things of HELOC and 401k pullouts and leveraging credit cards, right? And leveraging some of your savings accounts for this aspect. So if you're not good at it personally before you get into a business, you know, just be very conscious before you do that in terms of how you're going to leverage that stuff, because that could really impact your personal life the rest of, you know, the next decade or two. So just be conscious about that.
Brad, that's an important comment. And just to add to that, I wonder how many times you see this. It's not just they themselves, but if they happen to be in any type of relationship, whether married, thinking about it, you know, a significant other, that person could also have an outsized influence on whether or not you want to go through with these things. And on the flip side, there could be an adverse effect if things don't go quite well, not just for the relationship, but for the economics of that relationship, right?
100%.
So certainly, having your ducks in a row and making sure your personal house is in good order, not just by the numbers, but how you manage and your mindset about it all. Are you feeling confident and abundant about what you're doing? If you're feeling scarce or if money frightens you a bit, that's another thing that I invite you to tackle and to really get honest with yourself about, not just how it's going to work in your business, but do I feel comfortable doing all of this?
Yep. And one other thing is on the credit card side of things, I've actually seen some clients leverage credit cards and the 0%, you know, for 12 months in a very positive manner, where they've been able to been very responsible on mapping it out and disciplined in terms of minimizing their costs to keep it going, but leveraging that free 12 months or 18 months or 6 months, whatever you get, of whatever your balance is, to fund the company, pay it off, open up another one, things like that. Again, that's going to affect your credit score when you close and open, but at a minimum, this client specifically, like, was able to maintain ownership and factor this over the first couple of years of his business and play the game, which was very interesting to me. Again, this is the whole point of being creative.
It is,
all of these situations. Mm-hmm. But there is a ton of opportunities here within it, but, you know, it's, again, it goes down to discipline, you know, and then moving forward, you know, and executing.
Yeah. And you brought up another point that I just want to make a quick comment on, which is time frame, right? If you, sometimes a lot of us, particularly in our beginning stages, and this was me at some point in my life, is we can have this very short-term focus and very narrow outlook and, oh my God, I need something now. So I'm going to push that button and get that financing that showed up on my email and my inbox and not have any regard for it, but it's going to show up in 24 hours. So who cares? Same thing with your financing. God, I need this money now. But if you have a longer term perspective, and I think, Brad, for us, particularly at any stage, sometimes it's hard for people to think of 12 months out, particularly in the early stages, because I don't have the perfect crystal ball that tells us where it's going to be. But I really would encourage all of you, to the degree you can, work those projections, update them as frequently as you can. If 12 months is manageable for you mentally, it's really critical to have that much of perspective to have the best outcomes and to think about what you really can do on financing, particularly from your own resources. If 12 months is a bridge too far, go what's bite-sized and you can handle. And maybe I really would say at least six. Because as you said, Brad, getting those 0% offers on credit cards, you know, some of them are 12 months, some I've seen lower terms, and knowing, okay, great, I'm going to get this, but I need to know what's next and how I can pay out of that or qualify for the next stage of financing.
Absolutely. Okay? Awesome. Loved it. Yeah. What's the next phase?
Yeah. So all still part of startup and early stage. There is what's called peer-to-peer lending. Sometimes we call these personal loans. These are things you've all seen. You've even seen television ads on this, like LendingTree and Prosper and others like that. It used to be up to $35,000 only. Now some offer up to $100,000. For all of you out there, I would just Google it, peer-to-peer lending. You might see some good reviews on NerdWallet about what's available these days. And you can source all of those ones as potential sources of financing. High interest rates because they're unsecured. So that's what you're going to get. And yet they can be a good source. They're lending to you based on credit score, and then you can use it to go into your business. All right. So beyond that, friends and family come up. Now, we often talk about friends and family just in equity terms. But yeah, this is a big part about how they can invest in your business by giving you money structured in a loan of some type or some type of debt instruments. And normally this is going to come from your network. It's going to come from advisors. I've been that guy who's been an advisor to companies, and then I wind up being a seed or an angel investor in that company. Family members make this happen. And you know what's the one I see the least amount, Brad? Is someone's spouse. Because oftentimes the entrepreneur or the founder is in a relationship with someone who's quite less risk tolerant than they are, right? So they tend to be the least frequent investors, and yet I still see them show up on balance sheets or on cap tables. And an important thing for all of them is, will they do the following? Will they convert to equity if needed? Because moving them from debt to equity can be significant and important about getting other financing down the line. Can they do more than they originally gave you? So if an aunt or an uncle is saying, hey, I'm going to give you $10,000, so excited for you. An important question to understand is, hey, aunt or uncle, if I come back to you again, could you do another 10? Could you do another 20? Having that understanding of what they could look like in a lifetime of support for you is really critical, not just what you need right now. Can they delay their payback? Certainly, if they're giving you a loan, your ideal scenario is pay nothing on it and that balloon payment over some time. And then the next best is an interest only. The worst one is principal and interest in an amortizing loan. Mm-hmm. And the last pro tip is, will they subordinate to a future lender? Because if they come in, they're there first, and someone else to come in on top of them, presumably an institutional or a fintech source, those folks would have to subordinate.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. That could put you in a bind in the long.
It definitely can, especially because sometimes people invest at one point and then their conditions change, right? Mm-hmm. Your aunt or uncle who may have given you money then, maybe they have other things they need to be doing. Maybe they have medical bills or family circumstances, or they want to buy a house and that money I gave you, I need it now for that. All of those are stories I hear from time to time. We have one more on startup and early stage, community development organizations and micro lenders. And these are often overlooked. Why? Because they don't do a lot of advertising. They don't tend to show up in founders' inboxes. And yet I would encourage all of you listening to look for these. And what you can do is Google or search community development organizations, micro lenders. There's also one called CDFI, Community Development Financial Institutions. And then after that, put your state of where your business is, or put your county, or put your city if you live in a large city area. Because all of these organizations are usually going to be ones serving specific local communities by geography. A lot of them will support startups, pure startups, or super early stage. Many of them are there to serve specific demographics. We've seen a huge proliferation in a lot of these micro lenders and CDFIs and community development organizations supporting minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses. So if that fits your description, really encourage you to look at these, particularly in these earlier stages. And the last thing I'll just say on that is a lot of times, happily, these loans don't have hard underwriting criteria. They're as much focused on someone's character. And character is a huge, broadly defined term. the most frequent way people think of character is in terms of credit score. So it points back to what we said, right? If you've gone all in with your savings and your credit card, well, particularly your credit card, and you have a, unfortunately, it drops your credit score, it could even threaten you in getting this type of loan at this stage.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Yep. And definitely, you know, I always think of those last loans, those community development loans, kind of those nonprofit entities that are there to support some sort of mission type.
They are very mission driven.
Mm-hmm. Think of it very similar as like a college scholarship, right? Of
brilliant.
Junior, senior year, high school, research everywhere to try to get some free money. Oh, this one fits me. This one doesn't. It's not always about the smartest. Yeah. So like that just kind of gets into, you know, into you guys just, you know, being very, resourceful and looking on Google and internet and shaking hands and seeing if there's some things local, regional, state-wise that can help you.
That's right. And everything we just mentioned so far, almost all of it can live friendly together.
Yep.
So you can look at all of those options and do all of them. There may be some rare circumstances, particularly if someone puts a lien on your business assets of what you might not be able to do, or restrictive covenants, which say, hey, if I give you money, you can't get it from anywhere else. That actually shows up a little bit more in the next stage.
Love
so let's move to growth and pre-profitability. So now we're on stage two. We just covered startup and early stage. Growth and pre-profitability, this is where it starts to get channel specific. So Brad, I wonder, when you think of your portfolio of clients, about how many of them have direct-to-consumer businesses? Either they're selling on their own website or they're selling on Amazon or Walmart online or somewhere like that.
I would say basically every one of them, unless they are like a frozen entity or a frozen package good or something that doesn't travel well, or the amount of freight is just going to be ridiculously priced. I would say that's probably the level of that. With that being said, some of them just have a website up and aren't promoting it, but just to have, so when people go to their website, they can buy it. So there's definitely a lot of them that aren't focused on it, but they have some sort of, you know, level there.
There you go. So I think it's funny, when I started work and in small business financing, the launch almost always started in natural retail, right? And now we've seen it's almost always now DTC. So for all of you out there, probably nearly 90%, if not more, are using Shopify. And Shopify has its own financing arm. It shows up in your inbox one day after you've had some traction. Doesn't show up right away, but it will show up. It's interesting, in my strategy calls, Brad, probably about 10% have taken money from Shopify. Another 50% have said, I've seen it, but I delete the email. And another 40% saying, yeah, I open it, but I'm not really sure what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of say, okay, I'll think about it another time. And it goes to the bottom of the priority list. So Shopify is going to show up. And usually the price of that is hard to figure out because it's a payback based on your revenue and your collections. So I can't say I'm the best at figuring out what the APR is on this. It's not going to be cheap, but if you have a high gross margin, it could be something that really should be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But again, your experience may vary indeed.
Yeah.
PayPal is going to show up. If you take PayPal on your site, similar type of thing, payback based on collections. Amazon gets more and more interesting. We know Amazon's going to run all of our lives someday, but for now, they've... Their commitment to lending for founders is gotten stronger. They used to offer just a 12-month term loan. Now they have some interest-only options. You can look at Amazon Lending, search that, and see the options that are open to you. That's also one that just shows up in your inbox someday based on your activity. It's not something you can solicit or apply for. I will say a lot of people I know have used it really strategically. And again, the bigger you get, the lower the interest rate. And in fact, I see interest rates sub 10%, which is actually the cheapest out there. It's cheaper than SBA loans. It's cheaper than some commercial loans. So it's astonishing what they're able to offer. And then the next thing I'll tell you about are what I call funds. And these are the family offices and non-bank lenders. And many of these I call the usual suspects because we see them sponsoring events or at the expos. These are the Dwights, these assembled brands, private family office in New York, Abrams and Company, you might say eCapital. There are several other out there. Those were just ones I mentioned that I see most frequently. And they're usually doing traditional underwriting. They're looking at your cash runway. They're looking at if you've gotten VC funding. Because if you're still not profitable, They want to know that you have a path to getting towards profitability. And this is what you said, Brad, about where have you seen the economy change the tide and the way lenders are operating? This is one of the best examples. In a really boom market before, a lot of these groups had made lower amounts of capital available. So say for your companies that had, that were a couple of million in revenue, this could have made sense because they had a certain amount of receivables, a certain amount of inventory. Now that's come up a little bit because they want to put more money in play. So it just means that the other options need to be perhaps held on a little bit longer, which I'll talk about in a second. But one thing is, this is traditional underwriting. These are not fintechs. These are not algorithms and push button financing, as I sometimes call it, but they are really active funds supported by investors that are active in our space. And probably almost everybody here is aware of those folks. Yep. So if you are growing, if you're a couple of million and above, this is one to take a look at. I want to mention this in 30 seconds or less, because it's the nastiest form of financing out there, called merchant cash advances. I have to say it's available, but I would just say that's a lender of last resort because it's super high interest rates and it's the ones that draw on ACHs out of your account daily or weekly. Again, I'm not trying to criticize the whole industry, and yet this is the lender of last resort. But if you are in an absolute pinch, you have nowhere else to go, it behooves me to make you aware that it exists. But it is something that if you are in a desperate situation, you have to get it. Please, please, please take the time to think, how will you get out of it?
And also understand the money they take out of your account daily or whatever the—
Yes, that's right. Are.
Because some people, we've seen this a lot in our clientele the last several years as they've become more and more known. But some of the situations or the percentages or like what they kick out every day, like the client, the owner has no idea even the percentage or what it looks like. And we can't even explain it to us, to be frank, or get us paperwork for us to help with cash flow management or planning. So just be aware of that and make sure you understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tony, have you seen more and more of these? I just want to say Tony, Brad, have you seen more and more of these showing up for you on your own clients' balance sheets?
I feel like less and less the last 6 months than what it was the last 2 years, but I'm not involved as much day to day with my clients as I used to be.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's fair to say more of this happened as the result of supply chain disruptions and business shutdowns than it did a slowing economy.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah. I would say that that's the same as well, because that one was a big shock. A slowing economy was something we've seen happen
before.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
A couple more in this space, purchase order financing. You've probably seen that there are some traditional providers in this space, and there are some fintech providers as well. It's essentially money you get to pay your vendors, and almost always it's your co-man or your co-manufacturer, your co-pack, or whatever you call that person. And these people are wanting to pay them based on the creditworthiness of them. So when you're talking to who's going to produce your product, it's not always an easy discussion, but one thing you could ask is, hey, how is your credit? Do you have good business credit? Because if it's lousy, your PO financing cost is going to go up. Not always an easy conversation, because they're more interested in quizzing you and underwriting you about your financials. And yet I think you get to explore and understand them as much as they do you. They're thinking about your co-packer reliability. Will it happen on a specific time frame? PO financing is not for all of you who do your own manufacturing. And I've seen a lot more self-manufacturing these days. And it can't be used for goods that are eventually going to be sold on consignment. So it's not usually going to be in the mass drug channel where we see that most often. Next one, factoring. Factoring, perhaps a lot of people have heard about on this call. And sometimes it's got a bad reputation, and sometimes that's well-earned. And that's just because historically it's pretty expensive, right? It's, but it is something that can help your cash flow. And once again, if you have strong gross margins, you might say, okay, great. Given the choice between me putting in money or raising equity, factoring is something I'll still stomach, although hopefully someday I'll graduate out into a lower cost of capital. So how does this work? So Brad, let's say you had your company and you're selling to pick a retailer you love, by the way.
It's Whole Foods for easing this conversation.
Okay. So let's say it's Whole Foods, right? So you're going to be selling actually to UNFI, to the distributor, yeah, right? So let's say you have a purchase order that you had it made, And then the factory, it's about to leave your factory, it's going to be shipped to a Unify warehouse. Well, once you issue that receivable, that becomes an opportunity to factor that receivable. And let's say Unify is going to pay you in 30 days, right? And let's call it a numerical example. Let's say it's a $10,000 invoice. So if you do nothing, on day one, it's $0. On day 30, you get 10,000. Well, minus deductions, but that's its own rabbit hole to go down, right?
Yeah,
so we're not going to get into that. That's a whole other thing. But if you factor that receivable, what it'll be is you'll get some type of amount of money coming in, depending upon your dilution, how much trade expense you expected to have historically. And that gets accomplished when they do their diligence. Let's call it an 80% advance. So on day one, you get $8,000. When the money is finally collected, you get the other 2,000, 8 plus 2 equals 10, minus the factoring fee, the expense of the financing during that 30-day period, right? To keep it simple, one, if it's a 1% per 30-day period, which would be remarkable to get, it's more like a 1.5 these days or higher. Let's call it 1.5. You would pay $150. So net off of that invoice, you get $9,850 by doing it that way versus $10,000 doing nothing. All right. Factoring, for some people, they get anxiety because that payment goes to a lockbox. In other words, it's not collected by them. It goes somewhere else. That's sometimes hard for people to get over. It just means I would encourage you to consider it if it's a viable financing source for you and not dismiss it because of a lockbox, because customers are used to paying third-party sources, really.
Yep.
It's just a little hard and it's changing your systems and that can be uncomfortable. We get that.
Yeah. And when you're saying, just for the listeners, like when you're saying 1%, 1.5%, that seems really low. But again, that's for a 30-day period.
So that's for a 30-day period.
Multiply that by 12 to get the up. So at 1%, you're talking 12%. At 1.5%, you're talking 18% APR.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of mental terms of the interest rate.
Yeah, that's right. And for all of you today, given where we are in this interest rate environment, it's more like 18 to 24. It's more like the 1.5 to 2. 12 to 18 was a year ago. I'd seen that. Brad, next one is FinTech. These are the companies we see largely at our expos and at our shows and that are very active marketers because their cost of acquisition has mainly happened by being active on those platforms, right? And they're showing up again and again and again in founders' inboxes. And these are all the names we know. And it's a wide variety of products. Some of them are looking at doing purchase order financing. Some of them are doing receivables. Some are doing inventory. Some are doing accounts payable. Really all along the cash conversion cycle and everywhere along the supply chain, there's a FinTech option. The key thing for all of you is knowing what everybody does and wondering, can they play nice together? Could you do one on the PO side and one on the AR and inventory side? Is everybody going to be okay? An advantage of FinTech is the funding tends to be faster than the traditional sources, but the rates are going to be higher. And one thing I really encourage all of you to think is a lot of fintechs are algorithm based. They're based on specific proprietary formulae. And really please, in your conversations you have with them, dig deep to understand, how does this algorithm really work? How will my financing availability change over time? Because unfortunately, we've seen lots of circumstances where from one day to the next, people's availability is cut off and it puts them in absolute cash flow hell. Personally, I've seen that in at least a dozen companies I've spoken with, and it's incredibly unpleasant. Dare I say, algorithms can't replace relationships. So it's please, to the degree you can, have a relationship with an account manager or others so that you truly understand what you're signing up for, because the upside can be wonderful. It's all great when things are going well, but even if you have a hiccup or a spiky time in sales, or a much lower revenue than you anticipated, it can be a really nasty surprise. And Brad, I'm sure you've seen that, right?
1,000%. You can get the rug pulled out of you on a Thursday when you're just not expecting it. So I think that whole aspect is like kind of what Keith's saying, just understanding it. And at the end of the day, nothing ever is going to replace relationships and having somebody to call.
I think so.
Yep. Even like when you're in a banking relationship, when PPP happened after COVID, like if you have somebody to chat with or email with, everything executed a lot more faster. So when you're signing up with through a website, just a computer without talking to anybody, understand if things go awry, then you have no idea who to talk to. And
yeah,
that's not a good place to be in.
Yeah. So for all of you out there, FinTech can be sexier. It can be faster. Please consider putting in the mix the traditional sources as well. So you have broader perspective and you get an understanding about what you can do. And honestly, if you really dedicate yourself to making financing a priority, not just a reactive type of exercise, and you prioritize it in your business, you will have the time to look at all of these and make the best decision for yourself. I'll do a couple more really quick, Brad, because I see these less frequently, but I want to mention them. Equipment financing can be available for pre-profitable companies. It's usually from private funds, but they again are going to look for, do you have a cash runway to profitability? Usually these are for venture-backed companies that are on high run rates, but private sources can be available for equipment, because otherwise to get it from a bank or a vendor finance, you'd have to have multi-year profitability and usually a lot more time in business.
Definitely.
I wonder, Brad, have you ever seen revenue-based financing show up?
I feel like I'm starting to see it more and more, or kind of mm-hmm. Creative kind of conversations around that, huh. Which is great because I think it's opportunity, but expand on it.
Yeah, I do too. And I just had one new client show me something that showed up for them off of a website, and it was fascinating to see. So revenue-based financing is usually done by funds that specialize in this. I can tell you they're not easy to find online. It's not like they're hanging around our industry and showing up at trade shows either. But if you can ask around and learn a little bit about this, it could be a consideration for you. So the way this works is you have a loan that's paid back over time based upon revenue coming in. It's kind of like what we talked about in DTC with PayPal and Shopify. And so you pay this off over time until a specific return is made for the lender, right? So it can be, if your principal say $100,000, you might have a 12-month repayment. And by the time you're done, maybe you pay $125,000, whatever that is. So a lot of that is based on what your future earnings are going to be. Sorry, what your future revenue is going to be, not your earnings. And the specific risk profile that someone assesses for you. This, again, like you said, it's an emerging case. It's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you do have strong revenue growth, even if you're burning, but if you're going to narrow that burn and you have a sight line to profitability, if you're not getting love and attention somewhere else, this is something you can consider as well. Last one, I promise, in growth and pre-profitability, because this has come up a lot, is venture debt. And I wonder, Brad, if you've seen a few of these too, right?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. And do you find that it's usually structured by the current shareholders and the current people on the cap table that structure a venture debt, or is it usually brought in from someone else?
It's usually brought in from somewhere else that I've seen.
That you've seen, yes. Yeah, I agree with that. And I'd invite all of you out there that are venture backed, that if you don't want to go out to the market, you could even propose or start a conversation with your current people, investors. Hey, can we do a venture debt deal in addition to the equity you've already given me? Why might that be an interesting conversation? Well, in this uncertain market, they might be wanting to mitigate their risk. They might be saying, hey, fantastic. I love what you've done. We've been great on equity, but I don't want to do more equity because that goes outside my formulae or my parameters or what my LPs are telling me. For those of you who don't know, LPs, limited partners, those who invest in the funds. Venture debt could be a wonderful way to say, great, let's all mitigate the risk together and have some type of secured position for you, all of you investors. So like you said, for now, Brad, it's mainly outside sources, but I'd encourage every founder here to have that conversation and just understand if some people would be willing to do it, because that's a lot less hell. You're not talking to millions of providers. You're talking to the home team and the family members who've already supported you. Just like it sounds, it's usually term loans. Wide variety of terms, could be 1 year, could be multiple years. And usually what it's meant to do really is extend the runway between the first round you raised, whether it's a seed round or a priced round or a series A or a series B, to the next round.
Yep.
It's meant to extend runway, particularly if things are kind of like, oh shit, we need more money, or we've got other priorities, or we've got big opportunities to take advantage of. So that was the biggest category, Brad, I promise you. So we can go to the next one, break even to profitable.
Yeah, let's get it. I think, just kind of recap on that. I'm hopeful that, and as part of this, we'll definitely be kind of putting more of just probably like a article or content together that Keith and I will put together, but that'll kind of lay these out. But I think the biggest thing is for people to understand, like, wow, you just talked about 10 different things. I knew three of them, right? So just kind of understanding them. So this is a really good kind of high level intro. So let's move on to the next phase, the break even, right?
Break even to profitable. And so, as you said, Brad, you find, probably you said you found the most people in area two, right? The one we just went through.
Definitely.
And then a few break into this stage. And I've seen it more happening post pandemic because a lot of founders said, rats, if if I'm not going to get venture financing, I better find a way to manage a profitable business. And I'm astonished at how many founders did find a way. Now, it's certainly aided and abetted for those of you out there sitting on really fantastic gross margins. It's a lot easier to pivot to profitability to do that versus those of you who have naturally or lower gross margin categories or ones that are still early stage until you get higher gross margins. But if it's you, if you can move to profitability or have a sight line to it, let's just say in the next 12 months, the reward for you is ultimately a lower cost of capital. Mm-hmm. It's like one full degree lower. What could that mean? It could mean as high as 5, 6, 7, 8 points. So that 20-something percent loan could be a high teens loan or a middle teens. In some cases, a single digit, but that's extremely rare in this market now. Anyway, so let's dive in. So asset-based lending. Asset-based lending, we see a lot of this. And it usually is a revolving credit line. It's an advance on your accounts receivable and your inventory. Not always on inventory. Some shops only want to do AR. But if when you're interviewing and you're talking to asset-based lenders, and that goes back to the funds we talked about, you really want to get a good sense of what they'll do on inventory, because that can be the difference between hundreds of thousands of dollars in availability or not. So I encourage you to really quiz them on what are they like. Everybody loves AR. That's kind of a fastball down the middle. Inventory is not more nebulous. So it's not just finished goods inventory. Will they do in-transit inventory? Mm-hmm. For those of you who are sourcing from China or Europe or anywhere around the world, Africa, South America, doesn't matter. If in-transit inventory is your thing, if your goods are put on a boat and there's time, will they advance on that? That can also be hundreds of thousands of dollars in differences, sometimes even bigger. It's rare they advance on raw materials, but I think in some select cases they might. So again, the way this works is money goes in and out. It's kind of like having waves in the ocean. When receivables get issued, you get more availability. When they get paid, the availability comes down. All right. So that's asset-based lending. Now, of that subset, there are inventory-only lenders. And Brad, particularly this is going to be of interest to your specific D2C people who are only ever going to be D2C because they're never going to have AR, but they will build up a ton of inventory. So inventory-only lenders, inventory is inherently more risky, just is. And that's because in the downside scenario, it's harder to get rid of it. In AR, it's easier to collect on something that's already been shipped and presumably been sold. So inventory lenders are going to be much higher in total cost, super high teens to 20s now. But again, a viable option if you have really, really good gross margin to support this. Usually, though, this is another case where the market has changed. A lot of inventory lenders, the traditional ones in this space, are looking to do $1 million or more. So that's going to be based on net orderly liquidation value, a long-winded term to just say, hey, if they had to get rid of it in a hurry, what would they get for it? All right, so Brad, that's going to be for people that probably have about $2 million on hand. So these are for your D2C companies that are going to be pretty significant, right? Probably $5 million plus. Yeah. But that could be some of your universe.
Yeah. And one note about that is having, just from an accounting perspective, having accurate and real-time information on inventory counts, quantities, valuations, et cetera, is a big part of all of this, but specifically to that, right?
No doubt, because when I look at balance sheets and when I request information, that's a whole other story. But most common where lots of folks stumble is on accounting for inventory. And I know that's an important priority for you in the way you show up and the way you work with your clients. So, and yet if it's not accurately done, you could be leaving money on the table, right? Also, the converse is true. Having thoughtfully prepared statements with the accurate detail goes a long way towards getting a deal approved in that space. So now we're going to go into the SBA world. And I promise to speed it up a little bit because I don't want everyone to be spending 5 hours with us. But the SBA lending world is one probably a lot of you have heard about. There are different varieties available to you. They're essentially term loans, either 10 or 25 years. 25 years is for real estate. 10 years are for other uses. And the uses that are most common are working capital, which all of us are going to need, inventory purchases, equipment, refinancing, more expensive debt. That's always a big one. Or business acquisitions. That's the 10-year stuff. The 25-year stuff is everything real estate, construction, improvements. It's given by banks and non-bank lenders. For all of you out there, if you're, we know the flight has gone to the big banner banks, the Wells, JP, B of A. Fantastic for deposits, not usually as fantastic for lending. Usually it's the community banks and these non-bank lenders. There are 14 of them nationwide. Check them out. They usually have wider credit boxes, meaning more liberal underwriting criteria. They could be great places for you to go. There's also a very unusually not advertised product called a Bolt loan. I can certainly help all of you with all of this. And in fact, any of those these financings, as you know, but that's up to $150,000 and it's credit score dependent. It's dependent upon an outstanding personal credit score. Well, some of you might say a 700 is outstanding. Some of you might say, rats, that's not as good as where I've had it. But 700 is your minimum threshold for that. It's a scored loan, but that can be up to 150K based on a last filed tax return of over 500,000. Community Advantage loans are out there. They're the same thing as 7As, just a little bit higher priced. And those are for people who may have had difficulties with credit in the past. 7A is the one I told you about. It's up to $5 million. It can go a little higher for real estate purchases. And the 504 product, rarely seen in our space, is for those people doing large real estate projects. Okay, so that's the wide variety out there. So SBA has a lot of visibility. Probably all of us know about it, especially since EIDL. But again, this is not EIDL. These are not the disaster loans. This is the standard 7A and others that have always been around. Key considerations for all of you. The SBA is not the lender. And I'll repeat that. The SBA is not the lender because sometimes we think they are. And that misconception has been amplified by the fact that SBA was the lender on the EIDL side, but they are not the lender on the 7A. It's the bank itself, and it's essentially their underwriting criteria. And what they do is they have an SOP manual from SBA lending, and that's what they go by. And they get to decide the nuances, the shades of gray between how they will make lending available. The SBA is a guarantor. They provide a guarantor to these lenders to say, great, if you go out, Brad, and for Brad's, what's your favorite product? Cookies?
Yeah, brownies.
Brad's Brownies, Inc. Let's say you're getting a $500,000 SBA loan and you're using it for working capital inventory. 75% is going to be guaranteed. 25% is what the bank has as its own exposure. So $125. Yeah. And the other 75 gets sold on the secondary market. It's an incredibly lucrative profit center for the shops that do SBA lending well, which is why they're willing to do these deals. Yep. Okay. The one thing that's happened again in our market is the process has gotten much longer. It used to be a lot faster. Now, I would tell you it's up to a 6-month process. And I would also share with all of you, all of the listeners here, is usually the delay is on the borrower side. So this is a long process. It's critical to be organized. And usually the borrower is the one that is less prepared, but that's how I try to help and lessen the time. Personal guarantees. We haven't talked about that yet. It does show up in some of the other lending we've talked about. Personal guarantee can sometimes be a stumbling block for all of you, and I get it. I'm here to tell you I get it. Sometimes it's because it's really hard for you because you may have had experiences in the past that were bad. It can sometimes be a scarcity or a mindset issue that prevents you from doing this. Also can be a problem or an issue if you're in a relationship of some type, because you might be making a personal guarantee and essentially your family is making one. And that's sometimes not an easy conversation to have. Yet what I can tell you is if you are a profitable business, it's a little bit easier to have that conversation, because if you know how to get to profitability, you're less likely to fall underneath that and to ever face the risk of a liquidation scenario. But it has to be there, because that's what gets you access to this form of financing, right? Quick things on underwriting criteria. Minimum credit scores are like 650 to 680. If you've ever had issues on your personal credit, you really need to explain them. So if that's you, it's good to get ahead of that. If there are issues you need to fix on your credit, such as collections or things that, oh rats, I didn't know that was still there. Well, take a look, go on Credit Karma, Credit Sesame, go on their websites themselves, download the full credit report. If there's anything in there that's inaccurate, which often happens, particularly if a common name or just something was wrong and rats, I didn't know that collection that I paid off 10 years ago is still sitting there. Please take a look and do that. If you have open lawsuit, that's okay, as long as it can be explained. A deal killer is actually a divorce, particularly if you don't know what the liability is going to be on the other side of that. And SBA lending is very liberal. If you have $100,000 that you can that you need to pay in payments, you just need to show $115,000, 1.15 ratio in order to qualify for this loan. Just a couple more, Brad, and I promise I'm in the home stretch. One area that's grown in the last few years is USDA lending. And again, rare for folks in our industry. And yet, if any of you are out there thinking of having your own manufacturing, if you want to have your own manufacturing, USDA is a fantastic thing for you to look into. It used to be only for rural communities. It's no longer the case. There are loan programs out there for any geography, particularly if you're going to be doing something in what's called the food supply space. So that's if you want to build the most amazing factory, load it up with equipment, run your own manufacturing. I know that maybe is very few of you, yet wanted to make you aware of that. Love it. And so that's the break even to profitable space.
Perfect.
And finally, should I just dive right in?
Let's go. And then we'll kind of summarize.
Yeah. And I'll go back through each one of them. So multi-year profitability is the very last one. And essentially, it's really only one slide in any of my presentations because it's the loans and lines of credit that you're going to get from commercial banks. This is when B of A, Wells Fargo, Chase, Citi, all the big banner banks do their very best because they're going to lend you if you've been profitable over several years. And this is when you're going to get your lowest, lowest cost of capital. For probably 99 out of 100 of you on this call, this is not going to be you because there can be big reasons why you'd want to continue having higher cost of capital because you might get more availability of funds versus what you might get at this level. Big, big, big banks don't love high growth companies. They love more steady state with more measured growth. So even they shy away from multi-year profitable companies with extremely high growth rates. So, but I wanted to make that available to you. That could be you. But let's do a quick summary and I'll just rattle these off. So startup and early stage, again, it's you, it's the peer-to-peer lending or personal loans, it's friends and family, it's community development organizations or microlenders, startup and early stage. The largest bucket, growth and pre-profitability, it's the direct-to-consumer ones, it's the funds I told you about. It's the one I want you to avoid, merchant cash advances, PO financing or purchase order financing, factoring, the fintech options, equipment, and venture debt, and revenue-based financing too. Break even to profitable, it's asset-based lending, inventory, the SBA ones and the USDA ones. And we just mentioned multi-year profitability, the commercial loans and the commercial lines of credit. So that's your exhaustive summary of what your journey could look like, depending upon how you grow your company and the stages that you pass through. So just to close and then talk a little bit more about what I'm seeing in the economy, I really think the way to make this work for all of you is make financing a priority for you, not just equity raises, but all of these types of financing. You can do your research. You can spend some time. Make sure you're spending time with Brad and his team to really understand your financials. Make sure they're timely and accurate. That's going to always serve you well because you'll be ready. And more critically than that is understanding your cash requirements, really knowing going forward on whatever bite-sized timeframe you can think of makes sense. What is the cash I'm going to need and what am I going to use it for? And then find the right financing that works for you and realize that you can qualify for a lower cost of capital at different stages. And don't just think I have to continue to stay with what I have. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got.
Love it. Love it. Just kind of a couple of points on that. You know, number one is in on the next episode, we're going to chat more on kind of action items and specific things to put in place for you and your business. So not going to touch on that, but just think of this at the end of the day as a cycle, right? A progress of your businesses, the different phases of your business. You know, me at Accountfully, our business has been around for 11 years. It's had probably three different phases, maybe four And so this is a similar aspect as you kind of go into it from it and just being mentally ready for it. But then the last thing is kind of the aspect of, you know, with Keith said, understanding your cash flow, understanding your margins, understanding that information, just understand like a lot of this in order for you to apply or receive any of this stuff, it's kind of like an interview process, right? Like
it is.
The person that's giving you money, they're going to ask specific questions. I mean, you all watch Shark Tank, like they're specific, what's your margins, how much cash flow, how many months on hand, yada, 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 right? So the more you know about that stuff, the better. So making financing a priority, making accounting a priority, understanding that aspect is going to help all of this situation proactively for your business moving forward, but also when those uncertain times come up where you have to call your uncle and say, hey, I can't pay you back next month. Can we get a 12-month extension because of this and that? If you explain why it happened, how are you going to fix it, what it does to cash flow, what does it mean for profitability or break even, he's going to have more comfortability in that in doing that versus you being like, look, I have no idea. I just need money. Like, hopefully I can make it work. Right. So it's just that whole comprehensive knowledge of what's going on is going to help you.
Yeah, I totally second that, Brad. And I have a concept that I floated around called 15 for finance. And I truly believe that if everybody spends just 15 minutes a day, and maybe not even every day, but reviewing where's their cash, right? What's their AR? What's their AP? The monthly calls with you. I would say on average, if you can average 15 minutes a day looking at finance and financing, I think you'll always be well prepared. But when it becomes the last priority because you don't like it, and if you don't like it, please get help. Build a fantastic financing team that does love this and can support you and your decision making. So absolutely, I second everything you say. And you know, when we look at this uncertain market now more than ever, you're under scrutiny as a founder. There was a time when, dare I say, if you had a pulse or a heartbeat, people were ready to give you money. That's not happening anymore. So as you said, Brad, everyone needs to be well prepared. And still, you get to interview them to make sure they're a good fit for you and that they're providing you the right terms. And please ask thorough and deep questions. Make sure you understand really what you're getting into, not just on the sales sheet or the marketing literature about what your terms could be. Read those documents that you're signing, loan documents, because there could be clauses or covenants which make it very difficult for you to either get out of what you're doing or to do something in addition to what you just signed up for.
Definitely. So, and then from an aspect of kind of where we're at today, you know, versus where we were at 12 months ago, you know, Keith, just kind of what are maybe 3 to 4 quick points of just tangible things that people understand, the listeners can understand of what's different now. And I know you mentioned several of them throughout the chat here, but just kind of summarize kind of the big 3 to 4 to 5 bullet points of really what's changed now from 12 months ago plus the last several years.
Sure. I'd say the biggest thing is for all of you out there in the startup or early stage, most of you will be having to do more on your own in the you, friends and family, whatever, until you get to a higher amount of revenue than before. I would say kind of a general rule, there used to be a lot of financing available, you would say 500,000 in revenue, and factoring is always there if you're in that trade, and D2C is always there. But for you to graduate into the growth to pre-profitability range and get a lot of those people interested, the bar has gotten higher. The bar has gotten higher in terms of revenue you have to have and money you can put through a deal, receivables and inventory you can have, et cetera, in order to qualify for those people. Not all of them, but lots of them, particularly the ones that we see at our trade shows and doing advertising. So I would say in general, one of the important things in a hard market is the importance of you knowing how you yourself are going to make it if all these other sources just don't want to work with you and has nothing to do with you as a person. It's just you no longer meet their algorithms or criteria. Second thing, as you said, Brad, now more than ever, please be prepared to have sometimes hard conversations. And hard conversations can be with your original investors or your original, as you said, your uncle, who might need to support you a little longer than they thought. Because, hey, if financing is less available, if it's harder to qualify, those people might need to, well, you might call on them to want to step up. So it's important to have a good conversation and be honest, say, hey, what can you do? Can you do more? You can't do more? I understand. But certainly you don't want to be caught with your hat in your hand going back, because it can be very uncomfortable conversations. And I've had them myself when I was a founder. I could have been more prepared in the past, but I'm here to kind of heal myself by sharing with you that please be prepared. One other thing is realize it could change. I think we're going to be in this for all of 2023, realistically. I would say I think 24 could be better. However, what we all know to be true is with the banks and Silicon Valley Bank et al. Having its anxiety, eventually that's going to make their way to all the bigger banks and even the SBA lenders. So for those of you in the break even to profitable, it's even harder to get those loans. They're higher priced, and that credit box has shrunk as well, meaning less likely to do more challenging loans. What can all of you do? The best thing you can do, again, be on top of things. Your credit score does matter. A higher credit, a 700 credit score versus a 650 used to be okay. And I would just encourage all of you to think of that longer term horizon, right? What will it take for you to be break even to profitable? The focus on that cash runway and how you're going to get there is more important than ever, particularly for all the working capital lenders.
Love it. Love it. Great information. Definitely agree with Keith's kind of point of uncertainty is going to continue clearly with SVB, you know, what was that? Probably a month ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago when that
it's all hard to believe. It all feels like a blur, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then, you know, they just recently got bought or like First Citizens, other banks have went down. You know, this isn't just a domestic situation, this is global. So a lot of uncertainty there, I think, at the end of the day. You know, we'll get into the next episode of just kind of 6 to 8 to 10 action steps of what you can do, what metrics to focus on and different things like that, that'll kind of help you with that. But just be aware that this isn't like it was. You know, get as much knowledge as possible, get as much help as possible. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, you know, knowing this information is number one, and then actually implementing and executing, whether it's that 15 minutes a day, whether it's an hour a week or whatever it is, to help facilitate that stuff. So that being said, this has been great. Any last words on this information, Keith?
Yeah, all of that, Brad. And I would also say, allow yourself to feel supported by this, right? You don't have to do this all by yourself. I'm certainly a resource. Brad and his team are a resource. Other people on your financing team, internally or externally. You know, this is, I think, really now more than ever, a team effort. And having that alignment about what you're doing and why you want to do it and why you would pursue certain financing options or not. Now more than ever, when you're making these decisions in an uncertain market, I think it feels terrific to feel supported and know that people are aligned in the strategies you want to pursue. So I wanted to make that little bit of a mindset comment to accompany all the academic comments we've made on this podcast today. So thank you.
Love it. All right, Keith Kohler with all the information. Again, you can find Keith where at, Keith? Financingman.com.
Financingman.com. K2 Financing was my legacy site. Financing Man is a little bit newer. And then if you want to go through what could be your individual case and what your journey could look like, please reach out to me and schedule a call at yourfinancingreview.com. And you will get a custom strategy of your own, perhaps covering many of these that we covered today, perhaps just a few. Hard to say, but once you get that call, that's what you'll leave with.
Awesome. 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 Again, Keith, you rock. We'll be having another, our next podcast will be kind of more action items. I'm assuming it'll be a lot shorter, but this baseline in information is needed for you. Share it far and wide. Bookmark it. I think this is probably the most knowledgeable, I guess, important podcast that I've probably done with this, just because of the information there. We'll follow up with more information, and I hope you enjoyed it. Again, Keith Kohler, you know, your financing man, financingman.com, K2 Financing. Enjoy the chat, month end podcast. Check it out and share far and wide. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you all.